Project Access for All, the podcast. Interviews and stories about issues, organizations, and people working to create access and inclusion for people with disabilities. Everyone should be welcome everywhere. Here's Project Access host, Alvaro Gutierrez.
Hello, and welcome to Project Access for All. Our guest today is Michael Hingson. He is the president and CEO of the Michael Hingson Group. He's blind. He has a guide dog. He's a 9/11 survivor. He also is a best-selling New York Times author. He's also a disability advocate. He's a motivational speaker and so much more. And first of all, thank you so much, Michael, for being with us today.
It's my pleasure. I'm glad to be here.
Michael, I have the pleasure of seeing the interviews that you have had with Larry King and international people like that. And my first question is, how was that very complex 9/11 for you in that wonderful guide dog, Roselle, like?
9/11 was a day that for me validated and proved my philosophy of being blind and my philosophy of how to do a job. And it also proved that all of us as human beings can do more than we ever thought that we could do. I've always believed that blindness isn't the real handicap that I face, that the real challenge comes from people's attitudes about being blind. And so I've worked in the professional environment and workforce my whole life. On 9/11, I was the Mid-Atlantic region sales manager for a computer company. And I was in my office preparing to conduct some training seminars when the building was attacked. I had a colleague from our corporate office in California in the office with me. He was there to be a part of the seminar, but it was my seminar to run, and that's as it should be, because I ran that office and I would be dealing with the people there. So when the aircraft hit the building, there was no question about evacuating right from the outset. And I had spent a lot of time consciously and subconsciously thinking about, what am I going to do if there's an emergency? And I learned where the exits were. I learned what I needed to do to escape in the case of an emergency of any sort. And I thought about it enough that it became almost automatic, and I was able to think clearly about what to do to get out of the tower. The first thing was to evacuate our guests, then to make sure that they were gone, then to do what I could in a short time to prepare and then leave the building. So within 5 minutes of the time the aircraft hit, we were on our way down the stairs and our guests were already out ahead of us. But the important part dealing with a guide dog is it's not the dog's job to know where I want to go and how to get there. It's my job. I have to direct the dog, and the dog is going to look for me to give her good directions and to give her confident directions, and that's what Roselle did. Roselle and I worked as a team to be successful every day, and especially, of course, on 9/11, and that's what we did. So we were able to get down and get out and survive the attacks on 9/11.
Can you please repeat, because I think this is so important for our listeners to listen to. There is an anecdote when you are like in the 48th floor or 43 or something like that, when you yell something to the people upstairs regarding if something could happen.
Yeah.
Can you please tell us?
Well, I was self-serving. I remember thinking at one point, I'm getting a little worried here because we had power and lights on the stairs. But what would have happened if we had lost all power and lighting on the stairs? If we did, it would have been harder for everyone who could see to get out because they couldn't see. There were no windows on the stairs, so there was no sunlight. So I thought, I have to deal with this as best I can. So I shouted to everyone, Now, I don't want anyone to worry. If the power and lights go out, I am blind. I have my guide dog, Roselle, and we're offering a half-price special to get you out today only. And I did that to make people laugh, but I also wanted people to remember that there's somebody who didn't care if the lights went out, and we would help get everyone down the stairs and out of the building.
That is very, very telling and very, very true. And you know, something that people always think about is how are we going to stay calm in something like this, such an extreme crisis? Do you have any tips for anyone listening to say, in those kind of situations, maybe focus your mind in this, in that, focus?
Sure. For me, I focused, I prayed a lot, but I also focused on Roselle. I had the advantage that I had a guide dog who I needed to make sure continued to do her job. So I was able to focus on her and encourage her and keep her focused on guiding us down the stairs. So we worked together. We helped each other, because as she stayed calm, that told me that she wasn't sensing anything that we needed to worry about. Meanwhile, as she was telling me that just by the way she acted, I was continuing to encourage her by remaining calm so she wouldn't get worried. Because if I started to sound nervous, she would in turn look at me and be very concerned about whether I was doing okay or not. So we worked to help each other. But I think for anyone who's in an emergency or in an urgent situation, the best thing to do is to spend some time now thinking about, what am I going to do if there's a fire in my room? Make the plan and then think about it often enough and practice it enough that if there's a need to deal with an emergency, that you already have a mindset that will allow you to focus and not panic. We have the ability to do that. We have the ability to go in within ourselves and focus and calm down. We just need to do it. It's not a magic thing. It's not a hard thing. But we make it hard because we say it's impossible to do. Oh, there's an emergency. What are we supposed to do? I don't care what the situation is. We can always focus and be calmer and be more reasoning than we think we can if we just try. But it has to start with us making the effort.
Now, I know you have been collaborating for the Guide Dogs for the Blind, and you did that for many years. Can you tell us a little bit about that and the importance of guide dogs for people who are visually impaired, totally blind?
I use a cane, and I also use a guide dog. I choose to use a guide dog, although a lot of people do not. I think for me, it's an advantage, but that's an individual choice. But what I'm about to say works the same for both. But the importance is learning to travel well. The importance is learning how to go from one place to another. A lot of people want to teach us a route. Oh, we're going to teach you how to walk from your house to the store. That's not what I want to know. What I want to know is when I leave my house and I start walking, I want to learn the whole area. So I not only want to know when I get to the store, but I want to know what's past it. I want to learn to explore my world. And the advantage that we have is that when we do that, we really know what's around us. Everyone else looks at road signs, or they look at signs on the walls. And if they don't see the signs, they're lost. I go by other landmarks to know what's around me. And of course, now we have good GPS systems, and that helps. We have programs like Blind Square that help. We have maps on our iPhones and our Droid phones and so on, and a number of things that can help. But you still need to learn what's around you, and you need to learn to have the confidence to go there. And the fact is, nobody can teach you that. You have to experience it for yourself. People can help you. They can help you gain the confidence, but you have to do it.
Right. Growing up, how was the support of your family?
My family was very supportive. They just decided that I could do whatever I chose to do. And sometimes we all had to figure out how to do that. But we worked together to make sure that I learned whatever I needed to learn to get around and do the things I needed to do. So it was an adventure for my family as much as it was for me at times. But they were very supportive, and they didn't say, well, you're blind, you can't do that. They said, we'll figure it out. Of course you can do it. If you think you can do it, you can do it. So they were very helpful in that regard.
Always that I see the interviews that you have given, I see someone who is, you know, very positive, optimistic, you know, strong. What is the stone of that? What is the rock that gives you that way, Michael?
It's the self-confidence that I've learned in my life, and it's the sort of conviction of me and my attitude that ultimately I choose how I want to live. That isn't something that other people can do for me, and that's no different than it is for anyone else.
Can you tell us a little bit about your book, Thunderdog?
Yeah, we have Thunderdog, which is a New York Times bestseller, and it's published in a variety of countries. I don't think it has been published in Spanish, and I'd like to get it published in Spanish, so we're looking for an author to do that, or not an author, but a publisher who wants to publish it in Spanish. So if anyone out there is a publisher, it is a New York Times bestseller, and I think it should be done, and we'd love to do that. But we also have Running with Roselle, which is a new book for children. Anyway, Thunderdog was published in 2011, and it tells the story of what happened to me on 9/11, as well as my life in growing up as a blind person. The way the book is laid out is every chapter begins with something that happened on 9/11, and in the middle of each chapter is really a section that talks about the tools I learned to help me do the various things that happened in that chapter. And then at the end of the chapter, we come back to 9/11 and go on. So we talk a lot about my life in the various chapters of the book. And of course, we talk about what happened on 9/11. So it kind of splits between the two and then transitions back and forth.
In the book for children,
Running with Roselle is more of a book about me growing up. There isn't nearly as much about 9/11 in the book. There is some, but it's more about me growing up and Roselle being trained to be a guide dog. So it's kind of more teaching a lot about blindness for kids. Although what's interesting is more adults are buying it than children.
Your company, Michael Hinson Group, can you tell us about it?
Sure. After I left being employed at Guide Dogs for the Blind in 2008, I formed my own company to be the vehicle that did a couple of things. One, we sold some assistive technology, namely the KNFB Reader Mobile, which was the device that Ray Kurzweil invented to work on Nokia phones, which now is on the iPhone. So we sold that product here in the U.S. and some outside the U.S. And in addition to that, and now the main thing that I do is we use the company to be the way that I get speaking engagements. I travel the world talking about teamwork and trust and moving forward after 9/11 or any change in someone's life. So the Michael Hinson Group is the company that actually is what's hired to have me come and speak. So if people are interested in having me come and speak or want to learn more about that, they can go to my website, www.michaelhingson.com. That's www.michaelhingson.com. And they can learn about what we do. They can contact me through the website or email me at info@michaelhingson.com. And we can talk about coming to speak. And I do travel the world, so I'm glad to go anywhere where people want me to come and speak. We do have to charge for it because I don't have the money to do it without charging, but we can always make something work.
Michael, I have two questions related to what you just said about your company. One is, you're talking about an application for mobile phones, correct?
Nowadays, it's an app on the iPhone. It's a software package that you can buy through the App Store. And what it does is it takes a picture of any printed material that you point the camera at, and then it will read that out loud. And it does it extremely quickly. So it is a way to read any printed material. It's called the KNFB Reader Mobile.
Can you tell us for what kind of models of the iPhone you see? 6 and 6 Plus, you would say? Or maybe
it'll work on the 4S, but probably not as well as it will on the 5 and the 5S, and certainly the 6 and the 6 Plus. The 6 and the 6 Plus are going to be the fastest. The 5S is pretty good, and the 5 is pretty good. Those are the best. It will work on the 4, but a little bit slower.
And the other, this is out of curiosity, when you do your speaking events, how do you memorize? Or because some people tell me they use their phones and they have like a headphone and they have certain like bullets, so they like tap the phone and it's gonna say, remember to talk about this, and then they remember.
I meet with whoever is organizing the event ahead of time, so I know the things that they want me to talk about. And I oftentimes will have notes, but I do them in Braille. I don't read speeches. I deliver everyone as a custom speech. I don't like to just do the same speech every time. So I really want to customize every talk to the people who want me to come and speak. So I will have notes as well as some parts of my book that I will read in the course of the speech, and I will use them to keep me on track. But also, I listen to what the audience reactions are to my speech. I get a good idea of how connected the audience is, so that if I need to make some changes, even in the middle of a speech, I can do that. And I've had to do that before. Or I've gone to a speech where someone arranged for me to come, and they didn't give me a lot of information about what I was going to be talking about, and I had to change on the fly during the speech or right before the speech, because somebody didn't give me the information that I requested, which makes it tough. But I use a lot of notes, and I keep those in a binder. So everything is in Braille, because I believe every blind person should learn to read Braille. It's the only true reading and writing language. I don't want to have my iPhone or something else talking to me and distracting me. That's what reading is all about.
Do you think it's important to be a self-advocate?
Oh, I think every human being needs to be a self-advocate. And certainly blind people do need to be. I think also it's important that we find other people that we can work with to advocate. That is, there's power in numbers, but I believe that all of us should learn to be advocates for what we want.
Do you have a comment about the ADA at 25 we're celebrating this year? Are you happy with what has been done? Are you hopeful for the future with this legislation?
I think we've made a lot of progress. I think we have a long way to go. In some ways, we've made some good progress, but in other ways, we haven't. There are too many people who try to get away with not doing the things that they should do to help us make the ADA more successful. You know, there are just a lot of places where the ADA in the United States, and of course, in a broader sense, the Treaty for the Rights of Persons with Disabilities from the UN is all about putting a mechanism in force that would ensure that we have the same rights as everyone else. But we're not there yet. We're not accepted as first-class citizens like most people. And as a result, we have a long way to go before we're going to get that kind of respect and support from people as a whole.
Now, some of our listeners that may have any disability may be listening right now, may be thinking, well, he's successful, he has done a lot, he's very confident, but I'm not. I don't think I'm able to do so much. He has traveled the world. He has the pride, the dignity. I would love to have that. But I don't feel as capable as Michael Hinkson is feeling right now. How can we tell them to say to yourself, you are as able as you want to be. I mean, you have so much to give to the world, but you need to start changing that perception of yourself.
Well, that's exactly it. Gandhi says, be the person that you want to be. And the fact is that when people say, I don't have the confidence, then they won't. The fact is that too many people, as I say in Thunderdog, let their sight get in the way of their vision. Don't let your sight get in the way of your vision. You can choose to be whatever you choose to be. And whatever you decide about yourself is what's going to happen. That is a conscious decision that you have to make. Now, saying that and making it happen can be two different things. So once you decide that you want to be more confident, once you decide that you want to do more, you need to go find the resources and the tools to help you learn what you need to learn. It gets back to making a plan. So when I began to speak publicly and saw that I was going to be traveling to a variety of countries to speak, that wasn't something that I had ever done before. And I spent some time thinking about it. I spent some time learning to be a better speaker and getting help doing that. And then when the first request came for me to travel to, the first request was to travel to Canada. My wife and I did that right after 9/11. But a year and a half later, I went to New Zealand for 21 days. Oh, wow. So from California to New Zealand is a long way to a completely different and strange country, but we made it work. And the fact of the matter is that I regarded it as an adventure. I've been to a number of countries since. We've been to Korea, been to Japan twice, and the Netherlands and Ireland and a variety of places. It's all about making the decision that you're going to do it. And you're not going to get stressed out. You're just going to figure out what you need to know and what you need to do and then do it. One of the things that we're doing, in addition to the Michael Hinson Group, when we published Thunderdog, we started Roselle's Dream Foundation. Roselle is R-O-S-E-L-L-E. So we have a website, roselsdream.org, R-O-S-E-L-L-E-S-D-R-E-A-M.org. We're going to start doing a lot of educating about blindness on that website. One of the things that we'll probably start doing is having sessions, coaching sessions, where people can come and ask questions and they can learn about blindness and ask questions about blindness. And there will be some charge for doing that. It isn't going to be totally free, but we're going to make it like, if people want to do it on a regular basis, maybe $10 a month or something like that. We'll see. I'm still putting that together. But the idea is that we'll provide a way for people to get together, and I will answer questions and we'll bring other experts in and we'll talk about blindness and try to help a lot of people who may not have the confidence to be able to improve and decide and discover that they can do the things that the rest of us are just because they will get the confidence to do it.
Oh, when is this starting?
I can't tell you exactly when it's going to start yet. I'm not sure, but we're working toward it. It'll be in the next couple months.
Oh, that is going to help a lot. So, Michael, is there a life lesson that you have learned that you say, oh, when I was 15, I didn't know. Now I have found something that has made my life more fulfilling and more full of meaning now that I know this?
Oh, I think there are a lot of life lessons to learn. I think I've learned a lot about myself. I've learned anger doesn't help anyone. Revenge doesn't help anyone. And what I need to do is just be as best as I can be and be willing to help. And also sometimes ask for help. I think that's probably one of the biggest things. You know, most of us don't ever want to ask for help, but we can do this. Nothing wrong with asking for help, but ask for help and make sure you ask for what you need. I don't want someone to show me how to go from my house to somewhere. I want directions. I want someone to make sure that I know what I need to know. And they may walk with me a few times, but I don't want to depend on someone to get to the store. I want to learn how to do that, and I will use help to learn it, but it's up to me to learn it, but not just how to get to the store, but how to get to other places around me. So it's all about learning to be independent and interdependent, that is, depending on other people, and let other people depend on you too. Because I think that each of us has something to offer, as you said earlier.
Now, many people in our community, when they lose their vision, they don't have the mobility training, maybe don't know how to do that. And it's super important to get that, because it's going to make you, as you were saying, independent. And as you were saying, having a guide dog is great, but you have to know where you're going and so on and so forth. Do you recommend any way of getting a good mobility training, and how long can it take to get it?
I can teach anyone to use a cane in 5 minutes. Teaching people to have the confidence to use a cane takes months. I believe that no one should get a guide dog until they've learned to use a cane and learned to use it well. I think it's important that we learn to explore, get lost, and figure out how we got lost and discover where how we find ourselves again. When I started working in the World Trade Center, I walked around the complex, and I didn't want people leading me. I asked for a mobility instructor to come and help me. I didn't want to do that because I wanted to learn where things were, and the only way to do that is to explore it myself. And that means asking a lot of questions along the way. That means asking about what I'm near, or what's around me, and so on. But I think it's absolutely great to get lost so you can discover where you are. And people need to do that. Mobility instructors, people who teach mobility, are not a perfect solution. And they can only really give you so much information. You need to learn to have the confidence to explore, get lost, and discover.
Is there any final thoughts from Michael?
Well, you know, in Thunder Dog, we have a section called Guide Dog Wisdom. And what I'm going to do very quickly, how much time do we have?
No, we have time.
Okay. I want to read to you Guide Dog Wisdom. I think that it's a very important thing to tell people. So I'm just getting it right now.
Nice.
And I think that Guide Dog Wisdom are lessons. These are lessons that I learned on 9/11. And here's what I wrote. There's a time to work and a time to play. Know the difference. When the harness goes on, it's time to work. Work hard. Others are depending on you. And again, this section is called Guide Dog Wisdom, Lessons I Learned from Roselle on 9/11. Number two, focus in and use all of your senses. Learn to tell the difference between a harmless thunderstorm and a true emergency. Don't let your sight get in the way of your vision. Number three, sometimes the way is hard, but if you work together, someone will pass along a water bottle just when you need it. And some of this is going to be a little clearer. The references are to things that we talk about in the book. Number four, this is Roselle's favorite. Always, but always kiss firefighters. Because she got to kiss one of the firefighters as we were going down the stairs. Number five, and this gets back to some of the stuff you were talking about earlier. Ignore distractions. There's more to life than playing fetch or chasing tennis balls. Number six, listen carefully to those who are wiser and more experienced than you. They'll help you find the way. That gets back to asking for help, right?
That's right.
Number seven, don't stop until work is over. Sometimes being a hero is just doing your job. Number eight, the dust cloud won't last forever. Keep going and look for the way out. It will come. Number nine, shake off the dust and move on. And number 10, when work is over, play hard with your friends and don't forget to share your favorite Bodabum. And those are the lessons of Guide Dog Wisdom that I think anyone can follow. It's in Thunder Dog, and I think it really makes a lot of things clear, and it helps give people a path just to follow those lessons.
Right, it really does. So finally, Michael, remind us, how can people get in touch? How can they buy your books, etc.?
Sure. Well, they're available anywhere there are bookstores, so you can go onto Amazon or wherever and get them. Like I said, I hope we can get it published in Spanish. It's in a number of languages, but not in Spanish, which is unfortunate. But they can visit our website, www.michaelhingson.com. That's michaelhingson.com. They can go to Roselle's Dream Foundation. That's www.roselledream.org. And, you know, also, if they'd like to get a picture of Roselle, there's an artist, Ron Burns, a very famous animal artist who painted a portrait, which he sells. And they can find the picture, if they'd like to get it, by going to www.ronburns.com/Roselle, R-O-S-E-L-L-E. They can order the books on our website. But I think probably the best way to get the book in Colombia and other places is through places like Amazon, because they have better shipping methods and it's cheaper than us shipping it. But every book that we sell on the website does come completely autographed and potographed with Roselle's paw print.
In an email?
info@michaelhingson@michaelhingson.com.
On a final note, I want to thank Michael, can you remind me what is the person that helps you with the tons of emails that you receive?
David McKinney, yeah, he's our webmaster, yes.
Oh, okay, well, thank you to David for helping.
Sure.
And, well, Michael, just keep it up. There's only no more I can say. It's been wonderful to have you on. One of my idols is Larry King, and so I said one day I'm going to have Michael on a show, and here we go.
Here we go. Sure.
It's been a pleasure, and I hope our listeners get that same positive vibe from Michael that we all do when we listen to him.
People can find us on Facebook and tweet us as well. We're on Facebook, Michael Hingson or Roselle 911 Guide Dog, and they can tweet at M. Hingson. So we're on Twitter and Facebook as well.
That's wonderful to know. And so thank you so much.
God bless. Thank you.
And for our listeners, always remember to smile. And you can also like us on Facebook, Project Access for All. You can follow us on Twitter, Project Access for All. And you can also go to our website, projectaccessforall.org. And if you want to be on the show, you can email us at podcast@projectaccessforall.org. So thank you so much for listening and have a wonderful day.
Project Access for All, the podcast, is a production of Art Beyond Sight in New York. For more about Art Beyond Sight and Project Access, visit this website, projectaccessforall.org. And you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and find Project Access on iTunes. Project Access. Everyone should be welcome, everywhere.